You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to episode Derek Smith of the Cosper Pointcast. I'm your host, Trevor Shackles, back from vacation, joined by my fantastic co-host, Colin Cudmore. Before we get started, I just got to say how thankful I am for the Draft Debater series you did over the past few weeks, because people loved listening to them, and I know it was a lot of work to get so many great guests on the show, and we also reached 50 episodes, which is pretty damn cool. So I honestly love the direction that this podcast is heading, and I seriously couldn't have done it without you, so kudos to you, Colin. Here's to many more great episodes.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, it was a lot of fun recording. It's good to get back to some regular coverage now, but yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, for sure. And I know a lot of people appreciated the series and learning about a lot different prospects as well, not just the regular names that you're hearing. But we're going to be talking, obviously, about a lot of other prospects today, and those are the ones that the Senators took in the draft over the past 2 days. So obviously we're recording this just a day after the NHL draft has concluded, and we're just going to go over all the 6 picks that the Senators made, and then we'll discuss their overall performance at the end. But first, let's start with the 19th overall selection, and that's Finnish defenseman Lassie Thompson. So what was your initial reaction when they took him on Friday?
Well, before they took him, even going there, I was pretty ecstatic, honestly, just because we kept seeing so many great players falling to the Sens, and it was just lining up so well for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they took Lassie Thompson. Of course, it was a bit of a letdown at that point, but not that that's anything against Lassie Thompson. I want to make this distinction super early because this is probably going to be a recurring theme of this episode, but there's a difference between liking the pick and liking the player. I like Lassie Thompson, the player. He has good upside. He has, he's a great skater. He has a great shot, especially, but at number 19, considering who else was on the board and just taking all that context into account, I just didn't like the pick. I think this always comes down to how we look at the Sens drafting, even last year's. But it's just a matter of like who else was on the board and the context that was around him, and which is what they passed up on the board, and it could look pretty ugly in the future.
Right, and I think that's totally fair, and I'm glad you made that distinction early on, because I know people, I'm sure they're going to be hounding on us if you know, we're talking about, oh, we thought it was a bad pick. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, Thompson is a good prospect, and I like him, but you're right. I mean, there were so many good players left on the board. I mean, I was really hoping they'd be able to get one of, I thought there was no chance they were going to get Cole Caulfield, but once he started falling, I thought, oh, you never know. And then same with Alex Newhook, but they went back-to-back, so after them, I mean, there were still some good players available, especially a ton of forwards. And I don't know. I mean, I sort of half expected Ottawa to take a guy like Thompson, just sort of off the board, someone who no one really expected them to take at number 19. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. Things were lining up well for them, like you said, but I don't know. Don't you get the sense that they probably could have gotten him 32nd overall?
Oh, totally. And I did some research this year at just looking into expected range, and I did that by doing a whole bunch of consolidated rankings. I got a total of 60 scouts on my list, but mm-hmm. his projected range ended up being 31st to 48th. So I was talking to someone on Twitter today, and they brought up a good point that Thompson is one of those types of players where you almost might expect him to be one of those players that a team tries to target a bit earlier than expected. So maybe if Ottawa knew that there was another couple teams that had him high on this list in the mid to early 20s or just around that range, and maybe it wasn't as much of a reach for them as it seems to us. But even then, we keep looking back at the players on the board, and I guess even though they dropped to 32, you can't help but think that Kaliev and Bobby Brink are two players that could have a significantly higher impact than Thompson in the future, just with her extremely high ceilings. Even looking at Philip Tomasino, who went to Nashville, what a great pick that was by them.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they wanted to stick to defensemen, like you have Ville Heinola. Tobias Bjornfot was a bit of a reach, but I'm still a fan of him as a potential first-round talent. But I guess that brings me to the next point, is that the Sens kind of drafted for need. They got the right-shot defenseman, which I think was pretty unanimously their biggest weakness in their prospect pipeline heading into the draft. But and they did fill that, which is a good thing. But again, that's not really what the draft strategy needs to be for teams at the draft. Is you always want to go for that best player available and get the high upside, even if it ends up creating a bit of a logjam at one position. Like it's a good logjam to have if you have too many good players. I mean, Ottawa's kind of dealing with that with centers right now, but I mean, not all players end up panning out, and things end up falling into place eventually. So I don't know, but as for Wassie Thompson, the player, he's pretty interesting because he's definitely one of the older players in the draft. Like I think it was 10 days before the cutoff.
Yeah, I think born. September 24th was his birthday.
Something like that, yeah. But which is definitely interesting because, and like you look at all these tools that Thompson has. He has a skating, as a shot, he has the defensive acumen even. So it's like it's hard to see why he would be such a reach at that point. But we also have to consider the age is definitely a big factor, and he's closer in age to guys like Jet Wu and who was the guy, Ty Smith, who are other defensemen in the WHL last year who were taken in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
But Thompson is more comparable to them just because his birthday is closer. So we have to kind of look at their numbers more comparably. But he definitely has some upside, which I think kind of mellows the impact a bit. At least they didn't take someone like Alex Vlasic, for example,
who
just doesn't have any upside at all, basically. So again, I'm a fan of Thompson, the player, but yeah, it's still a reach.
Right, for sure. And I think he's an interesting player. Scoring 17 goals as a defenseman in the WHL is definitely nothing to scoff at. Mm-hmm. And just looking at some of his highlights, like he can definitely shoot the puck pretty damn well. So that's something to be excited about. And you're mentioning his age as well. In the 17-18 season, he spent the majority of it in the Junior A SM Liga. So like the U-20 league there. And you know, a lot of prospects his age, well, not a lot, but at least some would be playing at least a handful of games in the SM Liga, in the men's league. He'll be playing there. Well, actually, it's not set in stone that he's going back to Finland for next season, but he indicated that he wanted to go back and play in the SM Liga. So I guess we'll get a better sense of, you know, how good of a prospect he is next season when he's playing up against, full-grown men. But you're right, he does have that upside. One question I want to ask you is, you mentioned some other players that were available at 19 instead of Thompson. If you had to pick one player, like who would you have rather taken instead of Thompson?
For me, it would have been Kalia for sure. Mm-hmm. I honestly think that the numbers he put up in the CHL, and even, especially when he wasn't surrounded by many other good players, is pretty incredible. And the fact that he slid all the way to the second round is I don't know. The reason he slid, I think, was because of the perceived character issues, and I say that in quotes because, of course, it's just jargon that GMs like to throw around. But
right.
you can't score 50 goals without putting in some effort. So he's just a player that really impressed me all year. Bobby Brink is the other one that stood out to me. I took him in the SB Nation mock draft.
I mean, I took him too in Ad Hockey Buzz. So
yeah. Those were two players. Even though they ended up falling to 32. In the sense passing them again, which I'm sure we'll get to, but those were the two that I would have targeted. But you mentioned that you mentioned that Lassie Thompson is probably going to be heading back to Finland next year. I'm just wondering what you think the pros and cons are of that, and if you're the Sens, which way would you persuade him to go?
I mean, I'm sure they're persuading him to stay in Kelowna. It's no secret that Ottawa really doesn't have many scouts outside of North America, and I'm sure they're going to be, you know, wanting to stay close to home. They got a lot of scouts in the WHL, or at least covering the WHL. I think one pro of him going to SM Liga would be they'll probably check in on him playing for, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, Ilves, when he's playing for them, if he goes there. I'm assuming that a scout or Dorian or whoever is going to be watching him there, and then just sort of inadvertently also be watching other Finnish players. And that's a league that they really don't scout very much. I mean, they drafted Markus Nurmi from Finland, but besides that, they haven't really drafted many other Europeans outside of Sweden.
Totally.
I mean, there's other Europeans they've drafted, but they've been playing in the CHL, so it's not really the same. So I think that could be a positive if they're just sort of stumble upon some of these other prospects, because there's tons of great Finnish players coming out of SM Liiga or Junior A.
Yeah, and one other thing I think is a kind of a hidden pro to him heading back is that he'll, if he stays in the CHL, the Sens will have to sign him within 2 years, whereas if he heads back to Finland, they'll have two extra years if they want to sign him or not, which, I mean, I'm sure they'll want to sign him given he was picked number 19, no matter how well he plays. But it just gives them that extra time. And they've done that with NCAA players a lot in the past two drafts, where they like giving themselves the extra time to figure out if a player is worth signing or not. It'll definitely be missed if he heads back to Finland as well, because Kelowna is actually hosting the Memorial Cup next year.
Yeah.
So he'll be missing out on that, similar to what Philip Al did with Regina. But it's also just a different ice in Finland, and it'll take some kind of readjusting and then readjusting when he gets back to North America after that. So it's a bit of a mixed bag. I don't really sway particularly either way. I think if he goes back to Liiga, the fact that he gets to play against men in better competition, I think, may serve him better. But it really could go either way for me personally.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, there's something to be said for him dominating against his peers and younger players as well. But like you said, playing against men as well, that's a good, a good step in between levels. And it's probably about comparable to the AHL, maybe a step below or something like that. So, just last point for Thompson here. It's hard for me to compare these two, and I don't even know if you can either, but like, who would you say has the higher upside moving forward? Would it be Bernard Docker or Thompson? Because I mean, those are pretty much their only two guys in the system that they have that project as top four right-hand defensemen.
I'd say Lassie Thompson personally. You're right, it's tough to compare them, but I just think he's the better skater. He has the better shot. He has the better offensive toolkit. Whereas Jacob Bernard Docker definitely is more well-rounded out defensively, and I feel like it's a lot easier to be able to improve your defense. And I think Thompson already has a decent base for that too. Mm-hmm. That if he can round out his game even more and still keep that offensive toolkit, then I think he'll end up having the higher ceiling.
Yeah, that's fair. And I mean, honestly, Ottawa kind of needs him to be a top pairing guy, or at least
definitely.
I mean, It doesn't seem like they're going to be trading for someone or signing somebody. So I don't know. And a top pairing right-handed defenseman doesn't necessarily mean he's, an ace defender or something. He just has to be, by definition, one of the 60 best defensemen in the league. So, I mean, there's a chance that happens. I'm not going to expect that necessarily, but it's a possibility.
Oh, totally. And I think that's time we move on to our second prospect, because speaking of reaches at the draft, this one may have been, this one might have been Ottawa's biggest. I don't know. We'll get to the other ones later, but they took Shane Pinto, 32nd overall, played in the USHL, put up a point per game there. What team was he with? He was with
two teams.
Oh yeah. He was with
Lincoln
teams,
Stars, right? And Tri-City Storm.
Yeah. And he put up over a point per game with both teams, but again, at 32, what are your thoughts on Shane Pinto?
I mean, it's funny how where a player is taken can totally change your perception of this player. If he was taken in the fifth, sixth, or seventh round, I mean, he was projected sort of around, 80, 90, somewhere around there. Or maybe Bob McKenzie, to be fair, had him at 45th, so that's not that much lower.
Yeah. I have my projected range at 43 to 85, so it's around that range.
Okay, so somewhere in there. If he was taken, third round or something, I think I would have been pretty fine with this pick. He had his 32 points in 30 games with the Lincoln Stars. That actually looks pretty impressive when you consider the next. So he led the team in points with 32 points. The next closest guy had 27, and that was in 62 games. So that obviously wasn't a high scoring team at all. So he was obviously like the best player on that team. And then when he went to, actually, I don't know if, I'm assuming he got traded to Tri-City after that. He was, I think, seventh on the team in scoring, something like that. So ninth, just looking at it now. He was ninth on the team in scoring, so a lot lower there. But yeah, I just, again, I don't necessarily hate him as a prospect. I think he definitely has some upside, and like, I'm excited to see what he can do, but I just, there's so many other guys left on the board. I mean, like we said, Callie Evan Brinkworth still there, Igor Afanasyev, Niels Hoglander. There's just so many other higher or like more skilled forwards available. And I just think Ottawa really needs guys up front, especially who have a lot of projectable upside. And with Pinto, I don't know if that is necessarily there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he's definitely one of the safer picks of the draft. He kind of reminds me of Shane Bowers in that sense.
Right.
Where he's kind of, he has some offense to him. Just, I mean, he's a forward and he put up points, so there's that. But he's definitely one of the more defensively oriented forwards that went in at this range in the draft, which, I mean, isn't a bad thing in and of itself. But when you're at the draft table, you want to go for those high upside players who can maybe learn the defense later and then carry that offense into the NHL and then be those really high-end first-line players. So, I think it's just Ottawa being risk-averse at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at Callie Evan Brink, and those are two, risky players in different ways. But, I mean, you can say, it's hard to say that players who score as much as those who do have much risk. But, it's perceived risk, essentially. But, yeah,
It is just a bit frustrating to know that Ottawa's essentially never going to be taking a guy who is falling, like Brink or like Kaliev or something like that. Somebody who is, you know, has maybe a bit of risk, whether that's character issues or maybe he's lackadaisical in his own zone or something like that, but can score a bazillion goals, or maybe he's, you know, 5'7" or 5'8" or something, but scored a bazillion goals, you know, sort of like Bobby Brink. I have no expectation for them to take a guy like that just because they're risk-averse. And you were mentioning Shane Bowers. They've drafted so many guys like this, of this ilk. Yeah. Colin White, traded for Josh Norris. And maybe Norris has a bit more upside than those two, but still, it seems like they're really fixated on these guys who are projected as two-way centers that are defensively responsible, but they don't necessarily have the highest upside. And again, I say this with, you know, I don't even not like Pinto as a prospect, but I don't know, 32nd is pretty high.
Yeah, definitely. And he's heading to the University of North Dakota next year, where he'll be with Tykonic and Bernard Docker, which I guess is cool,
yeah,
you know, to have your prospects growing up together. But at the same time, like, it shouldn't really be affecting your draft position that much, especially you like picking him as high as 32. But I'm sure they trust the University of North Dakota, kind of like what other teams do with the London Knights, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a strange pick, just because the Suns had all night to think about this, and I don't know if they overthought it or whatnot, but it just really didn't pan out as what everybody was expecting or what was really the ideal decision here, I think.
I mean, also, Dorian even said at the end of the first round, he said that there were multiple teams calling him wanting to move up to the 32nd overall pick, so I really wonder what teams were offering. Because honestly, it probably would have been worth it to move down to, I don't know, 45th or whatever and get an extra third, which is a good segue, I guess, to talking about the trade that they made to move up to the 37th selection, and they had to give up their own third round pick to do that. Actually, I should say it was Pittsburgh's third round pick. Do you want to talk about the 37th pick the 37th pick from the draft, I should say?
Sure. Well, they made a trade with Carolina, trading picks 44 and I believe 88 to Carolina for pick number 37, where they took goalie Mads Søgaard, who is a really tall goalie, and that's essentially the most you need to know about Søgaard. He's almost 6'8". He was measured 6'7.5" at the draft, and I'm sure he's still growing. So, he's from Denmark, which is he the first Danish player in the Sun system? Am I wrong?
Well, Regan.
Oh, of course, Peter Regan. How can I forget?
Legend.
But not only is he tall, but he put up a .921 save percentage in the WHL, which is impressive for pretty impressive for an 18-year-old goalie. But like in its own right. But for me, it's just the fact that they traded up and picked a goalie. Those two things kind of rubbed off on me a bit. A bit poorly because I mean, one, trading up is just mathematically never worth it. Like, it's very rare that a team will trade up and end up picking like a end up with a better player than the two others that that they traded away essentially. And I guess you look at Carolina's picks and they end up taking Jameson Rees and Antoni Haka, and those are two players that I consider pretty decent talents, like early second round to even first round talents for Haka, I'd say.
Yeah.
So that could look pretty ugly in the future. But yeah, just back to Sogard for a second. I mean, so he's very tall, put up good numbers in the WHL. I'm honestly not much of a goalie scout, so I really don't know what else to add to that. I don't know, any other thoughts on the pick?
Right. I mean, you mentioned moving up, and I think there are some instances where moving up in the first round can be worth it, especially if the cost is not so prohibitive. I mean, the best example is moving up to take Erik Karlsson. I mean, that obviously worked out incredibly well. Nashville ended up with Chet Picard, so that was not very good. But you're right. Like, I think moving up outside of the first round, so moving up in the second round, I mean, it's just, it's odd. And they've done that in the past. They did that in 2015, ended up getting Gabriel Gagné, and that was just, man, that looks awful right now. So,
training for tall players, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Same thing. And it's doubly shocking that they drafted a goalie, because if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure I heard Dorion say something along the lines of they're pretty much not going to be taking a goalie this weekend. So when I saw that they took Sogard, I was pretty shocked. But yeah, I mean, they must have had him pretty damn high. They mentioned that they had him projected to go in the first round, or maybe not projected to go in the first round, but they had him as a first round talent. So I guess they didn't want to see him slip any further, and perhaps they had good reason to believe that somebody before 44th was going to take him. But it's weird. And I mean, the good thing is, out of any of their picks, I think I'm actually, well, maybe he's probably about the same as Thompson for level of excitedness. Because I really like Sogard as a prospect. Like you were saying, .921 save percentage in the WHL, that's pretty damn impressive. So I think there's a decent case to be made for him being the best goalie prospect out of him, Marcus Hogberg, Phil Gustafson, and Joey Decord. He's obviously the farthest away from the NHL, but yeah, at least Ottawa's goaltending situation moving forward is looking pretty damn solid, because I mean, there's no guarantee that any one of them turn out to be an NHL starter, but you'd have to think chances are good at least one of them is going to be. So at least there's that.
I mean, see my issue.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Is more so just that they took a goalie in the second round to begin with.
Fair,
so
you
look at the goalie prospects that they have in the system anyways. Gustafson was the only one taken in the second round. That was by Pittsburgh. And they took, Decord was the seventh round pick. I believe Hogberg was, I think it was a fourth round pick, I want to say. But it's not the type of pick you want to make this early in the draft, even in the second round. Like, sure, he put up impressive numbers, but goalies have such wide ranges of future trajectories that he could end up he could end up having a below 900 save percentage next season, and it really wouldn't even be that surprising, just because goalies can vary that wildly from year to year so often. So I personally disagree. I don't think he's wouldn't put him that high as on the list of Sens goalie prospects, just because I think Decord really established himself with his skill level as a goalie last year, and Berkus Hogberg, just because he's closer to the NHL, I think. I put him above there, but yeah, him and Filip Gustavsson is two of the younger goalies who still just have these very wide ranges of trajectories. I mean, he could be a starter in the future, but he could also end up being a bust as soon as next year, essentially.
Yeah.
So there's so much uncertainty with goalies that it's almost like I'd almost go as far as refraining from drafting goalies entirely and just looking at goalies to sign that are kind of moving upwards up the ranks, who are maybe even just like in a bit older in range, or even free agency, even, because you see how these can turn out for some teams. I think of Boston with Yaroslav Halak, for example, and how well that's turned out for them, even with Tuukka Rask, like, he's been playing well. So it's just hard to draft goalies with any kind of certainty in the NHL draft at such a young age. So
yeah,
that's my take on it. Yeah.
No, and for sure, and I agree with that. I mean, there was somebody who said that, and I think there was actual data to back this up, that there's essentially no correlation between where a goaltender is taken in the draft and his performance in the NHL. I mean, first rounders are performing just as well as sixth and seventh rounders, so it's almost pointless to take a goalie so high. So you're right in that sense. Yeah, it's definitely high to take a goalie at 37th overall. So again, this, you know, third pick in a row where we're going to say, I think we both like the prospect, but, you know, if he was a fifth round pick, I would have been a lot more excited. What do you think? Do you think this says anything about Dorion's faith in the three goaltending prospects moving forward? Like, do you think he doesn't necessarily see them or any one of them becoming a starter? Because I don't know. I mean, I don't think other farm systems have three goalies like the Senators do, like this, that are, you know, could potentially be starters within the next few years. And now they have four.
I'm not too sure. I think it might just have to do with an asphyxiation to these prospects, which I think is another recurring theme, and we'll get to that, especially in the next prospect. But they probably had a WHL scout who came up to them and said, Mads Søgaard is going to be this elite goalie. And they had him high on the list, way above everyone else. Projected range, I had 53 to 87. I'll add that Søgaard was, if the Sens were set on taking a goalie there, Søgaard was probably the right pick. Kochetkov went the pick before. Spencer Knight already went a bit, in my opinion, too early to Florida. But it was probably just one scout who really liked a player, which I guess transitions extremely well into our next prospect that we're talking about. Fourth round pick. What was this? Yeah, first pick of the fourth round, number 94. The Senators selected Victor Lodin. Or Victor Lodin, however you pronounce it, 94th overall. He played for Örebro in the Swedish Hockey League. He's a centerman. He's 20 years old too, so he's a double overager. So I don't know. What was your reaction to the pick?
Oh, I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, I was out during the draft, so I didn't see the pick until later. But it's a strange pick. I searched Twitter to see the reaction afterwards, and he was pretty much on no draft list. Like, he wasn't even expected to get drafted, you know, because he's 20 years old. I mean, and I think that's, you know, maybe teams expected him to get signed in the summer or something like that. But yeah, he's 20 years old. He had 5 points in 41 games for Örebro. And I mean, obviously, like, he's a young player, so I'm assuming he didn't really get that much ice time. But yeah, I don't even know what to say about him, because there's like not that many people who know many things about him. Apparently, Dorian was saying that their European scouts were ecstatic that they were able to get Lodin, whatever how you pronounce it. But again, it's one of these picks, like, I don't know why they had to get him so early in the fourth round. They probably could have got him with their sixth round pick. hell, they probably could have even signed him as a free agent. So it's, yeah, for sure, it's a bit odd.
So, yeah, I mean, I did my consolidated ranking, 60 different scouting sources. Nobody had Victor Woden on their board. There just nobody ranked him. He was that off the board. Like, if the Sens didn't draft him and they could have signed him in the offseason, like, they could have just done that. Like, it would have been that easy. And you mentioned that the European scouts were super excited about it, but every scout's excited about every pick that this team makes. And, I mean, it really comes down to one scout on the Sens. It was Anders Osberg, who's been with the Sens for a couple years now, but he used to scout for Orebro. And he's been following him very closely. And you also look at the Sens, they signed Nick Ebert as well off the same team. So, it just seems very, I mean, it's definitely one of the, it's probably the biggest reach of that round. I personally consider it a throwaway pick, just considering how mediocre Woden played last year. Mm-hmm. Of course, I just considering how little I know about him still. Like 5 points in 41 games is what you'd expect from like a 17-year-old or 18-year-old, first time draft eligible. It's super rich to give a fourth round pick for Victor Woden, and the first pick of the fourth round at that. And you look at the guys who went after that. Jordan Spence afterwards, he prospect I was all over. And guys like Matthias Michelli, Henry Thrun, Michael Tepley, Carter Berger, even. There's, again, like these are players that still provide great value. Jaeger Spiridonov, even, he's a player I would have targeted in the second round, and he fell all the way to 108th. And the Sens keep on passing on all these other guys who just have this higher upside. And Woden just does not have that. He's 20 years old. He's a known commodity. Which, I mean, can be a good thing. If you look at someone like Leeson or who's the other overager I'm thinking of?
From this draft?
Yeah, from this draft. Ooh. Who was?
I don't know.
Anyways, there's another Swedish overager who I was a big fan of.
Fagamo?
Yes, that guy.
Yeah.
Samuel Fagamo. And they're more known commodities, but in a good way. So like they put up extremely good numbers in the weeks that they played for, whereas Woden is just kind of, I mean, it's underwhelming to say the least. So.
Yeah. I mean, he just strikes me as a guy who, you know, like maybe they're hoping he's going to be like some sort of third line player or something like that. And I just, that's so frustrating if you're actually going to be drafting for, you know, like a depth player or something. You should be hoping that every single one of your draft picks is going to be a top line player or at least like a top six player. And obviously that's unrealistic, but that's what you're trying to look for.
Yeah, who has the potential to reach that.
Exactly. I mean, someone like Drake Batherson, you know, at the time I definitely thought it was a weird pick because he was an overager and didn't have that great numbers, but he clearly had the upside and now he's reaching his potential. So I don't know. It is strange that Ottawa's had some very weird fourth round picks in the past. I mean, they've had Todd Burgess, I think was that 2016, I want to say?
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, and then Tim Boyle as well. He was drafted out of high school and like hardly ever played after that. It was just very weird. Christian Willanen, I guess, was a bit strange too because he was also an overager from the USHL. But I mean, obviously that's worked out. But yeah, like Burgess, Boyle, Lodin, just some weird picks, and they're all in the fourth round. So I don't know what it is about the fourth round, but yeah, just a strange pick. I don't know why they didn't sign him instead.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely reminds me of the Todd Burgess pick. Even Todd Burgess, right? He had great numbers in the NHL NHL in his draft year, even as a double overager. So. I mean, even for Burgess, if you want to talk about him specifically, he injuries really plagued him after that. He missed an entire season. But yeah, it just seems like a pick that nobody would have made, even if the Sens didn't make it. So
yeah,
it's worrying. It's and also this is the first European player that they drafted since 2016.
Yeah,
2017 and 2018 were completely North American.
Dolan, right?
Yeah, it was Dolan and I believe...
And Nurmi.
Yeah, and Nurmi in that year. Yeah. So, the Sens only have three scouts doing all of Europe. And for this to be their first pick in 3 years is extremely underwhelming.
Yeah. And again, I mean, we talked about this briefly yesterday on Twitter. It's it's a guy from the SHL, and so they do a decent amount of scouting in the SHL, and like they've drafted some pretty good players from there. But I mean, outside of SHL, within Europe, it's essentially non-existent. I mean, they had Nurmi from Finland, but I mean, there's nobody being drafted from Czech or Germany or Norway or Slovakia or wherever. And yeah, that's definitely an area that they need more scouts in Europe. That's just, they need more eyes. Like, you can't possibly expect three guys to cover the entire continent. So yeah, just to sum it up, like just a weird pick at 94th overall.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, like there's well over a dozen leagues worth covering in Europe.
Yeah.
And ideally you'd like to have at least one person dedicated to that league, to each league.
Exactly.
And every NHL team, I think Chicago is the only one who's extremely heavily invested in this, but really there's so much market efficiency here, or market inefficiencies here. And even just looking at data, Loden just doesn't, I mean, I'm just looking at service data right now, but Loden just doesn't really seem to stand out in many different ways. So I think we should move on to the fifth pick the Sens made. And this was definitely less of a reach. He was definitely on some scouting boards, but they drafted Mark Kastelic. It was in the sixth round, I believe.
Fifth round.
In the fifth round. And so Mark Kastelic, another overager by the Sens. He's also already 20 years old. I believe he's also a double overager. He played for the Calgary Hitmen this year, captained them. He had 77 points in 66 games, which, I mean, sounds great for a draft-eligible player. Looking at his age, 20 years old, you kind of expect him to be doing that around that age group. I don't know, what were your thoughts on Mark Kastelic?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to look back at his draft year would have been 2017. And that year he had 35 points in 67 games, which, you know, maybe...
It's respectable.
Yeah, it's respectable. I mean, that maybe gives you a late round selection, especially at his size. I mean, we got to mention, this guy's a truck. I mean, he's 6'3", 220 pounds. So, I mean, Ottawa definitely loves that. And he also had 122 penalty minutes this past season. So, from the looks of it, from a friend, Henry Brown at Sens Prospects on Twitter, he was showing some highlights of him fighting, so it seems like he's like a really tough dude, and you know, probably like gonna be a grinder type player moving forward. But you know, like in this past season, he captained the Calgary Hitmen, and I think what's more impressive about his point totals is that he had 47 goals as opposed to 30 assists, and those 47 goals were third in the WHL, so that's definitely pretty impressive. His ability to score goals. But like you said, he's 20 years old. If Ottawa signs him, I believe he will probably be playing in Belleville, correct?
Oh yeah, for sure. He'll be in Belleville next year. Yeah. Almost certainly.
Yeah. But, so, I mean, he's someone that I'd be pretty curious to see how he does in Belleville in his first season. I mean, if he puts up a respectable, you know, even 40, 45 points, like I'd be pretty happy with that. But I don't know. I mean, you always hope guys like these are guys who have really figured things out over the past 2 years. You hope that you're not drafting the same guy from 2017. But I don't know. I mean, there must have been some guy who was really high on him watching Calgary all season, but yeah, it's strange to see them take another 20-year-old.
Yeah, and to me, this just has character pick written all over it.
Yeah,
it's like they're trying to find the next Zach Smith, essentially.
Right,
and that's not the player you're trying to find in the NHL draft. You can sign another Zach Smith in free agency in the offseason for like $1.5 million, and getting Mark Kastelic he just doesn't scream upside to me. Even though he scored 47 goals, he works off of his physicality. You're right. Like he's just a super, he's a big player really. And, kind of powered through a whole bunch of all this younger competition in the WHL. So it like, given his size, it's kind of expected that he'd be able to pick up this, these types of surface level numbers. So, It's just, it was definitely less of a reach. I have his projected range at between 104 and 184, but again, that is only three different sources who would actually ranked him. So he was definitely on some boards, and I'm sure that some other team would have taken him if Ottawa didn't, just because lots of other teams like kind of love that character and have been drafting pretty risk averse. So another bit of a strange pick, less strange in compared to everything else. I always bring this up with every pick now, but there's just always talent left on the board, and to take another double overager with Mark Kastelic's profile is not ideal.
I will say one last thing about Kastelic too. Like we're both mentioning, 47 goals, definitely very impressive. But it also sort of reminded me of a lot of tough players, guys who became, fourth line fighters and fourth line grinders in the NHL. A lot of those guys actually did pretty damn well in junior, especially like in the CHL. I'm just looking at Tom Sestito's page right now. I mean, he's played, so he had 154 career games in the NHL, 21 points, obviously. I mean, he had 499 penalty minutes, though, so obviously, like, the ultimate tough guy. In his age 20 season, you know how many goals he scored? Guess how many goals.
Was it, like, 55 or something crazy?
No, not that high. 42, though. So, like,
still amazing.
It's still amazing, yeah. He had over a point per game in his final season in the OHL for the Plymouth Whalers. So, like, that's pretty similar. He had 135 penalty minutes. That's very similar to the kind of production that Kastelic had. So I'm not saying he's going to turn into Tom Sestito or something like that, but I could certainly see him being someone like a Zach Smith or whatever on the third line. Just because, putting up this kind of production is not necessarily expected, especially the 47 goals, but it's not out of the ordinary or anything.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, just because he has that extra 2 years on him, he's just, again, he's a known commodity. He doesn't have the potential to reach the top six of an NHL roster. He's not going to be touching that unless Ottawa does some other roster surgery or something like that. But for me, I think that was the first time in the draft that Ottawa didn't reach on a player. And considering that happened in the fifth round on a questionable player, it kind of speaks volumes to how poor the rest of the drafting was.
Yeah. So let's go on to the last pick, I guess, then. And that was in the sixth round. Maxence, Gwinnett? Gwinnett. Okay. Very, very French name. Gwinnett. 187th overall from the Val d'Or Forêt. And he's another right-hand defenseman, and that's obviously something that they need in the system. I don't know too much about him, do you have any thoughts on him?
He's again just one of the safer picks. It's Ottawa being risk-averse in the seventh round, and I mean, when I was fortunate enough to talk to Pierre Dorion last year, or he said in his interview that Ottawa was going to take less of a shot on these potential high-end players in these late rounds, and I think is really, really showing. And not that I have anything against Maxence Gwinnett personally, but he definitely has a good skill set. Like he's definitely more of a two-way player. He doesn't have the high-end offense, but and he was on more draft boards than even Mark Kastelic. Mark Kastelic was only ranked by three sources, whereas I Gwinnett ranked by seven different ones. So he's also another right shot defenseman. So at least they get to build some depth there. Mm-hmm. 32 points in 68 games. That's Mark Kastelic levels of junior numbers in his first year. So for a defenseman, I mean, for a seventh round pick, I'm totally fine with that. Honestly,
would your mind be changed if I said it's actually a sixth round pick?
I mean, a little bit, maybe.
Because they didn't have their seventh, but yeah. I don't think I can say too much. I mean, I'm just looking at his team stats right now. It's pretty hilarious. Because, I mean, obviously I'm not taking any... I'm not taking anything from his plus-minus, but he was minus 33 on the season, and there were other guys on their team. I mean, their second-highest scorer was minus 59, just... Oh boy, I I don't think there was a single positive player in their top like 22. This is insane. Wow. They must have been a pretty bad team. So, you know, maybe he gets traded at some point to a better team and can develop further. But yeah, I mean, he was ranked a bit higher on other lists. So at least this doesn't seem like it was a reach. Maybe actually a value pick, in fact.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm just looking at his QMJHL numbers here. And he played about over 20 minutes a game in the QMJHL. So he was trusted on Final Four, even though he was kind of, they kind of had to just because they were such a weak team. But but also concerning is just that he had his goals for percentage was 34.62%, which even on Val d'Or, I think that was minus 8% relative to the rest of his team when he was off the ice. So I just looking again, it's really tough to evaluate him because he has such a wide trajectory and he was playing on such a bad team. But he definitely has. I wouldn't have taken him any earlier than this. That's what I'll say. So, I think it was the Sens' least reachy player in the draft.
Yeah.
Which again, just says a lot.
High praise.
Yeah, it's definitely another example of Ottawa continuing to be risk averse in the draft and just not really going for those players. Because even you look, I think it was Dustin Wolf was the player that everybody started raving about in the seventh round, who just completely dropped off everybody's board for some reason. And even guys ended up going undrafted. I know Billy Constantino is one guy that was ranked in the top 100 for a lot of places and completely fell off the board. So how it compares to those guys, I'm not too sure. But yeah, it's he has the making of a seventh round pick.
Mm-hmm. Well, so those were the six players that the Senators selected over the weekend, which is kind of funny that they only took six players considering, you know, they're in a rebuild. They have tons of picks in 2020 and 2021, only six this weekend. But yeah, let's just go over our overall thoughts, recap, you know, their all the six selections together. And sort of talk about how well Ottawa did at the draft. So I don't know if you've even thought about giving a grade for them, but would you maybe be able to give one on the spot right now? Because I don't even think I've thought about it too much, but what do you think?
Oh, it's a straight up F for me.
F? Oof.
It's no question. Emmanuel Perry, if you've seen his draft coverage on Twitter, he was giving out grades. They gave him an F. Ottawa didn't. There was no pick by Ottawa that felt like that felt comfortable at all, and especially on those first few rounds, it seemed like they kept reaching and reaching and reaching and kept getting infatuated with these players that they could have traded down for even, and it was just overall bad draft strategy, bad pick selection, even though they walked away with some good prospects, just the way they went about acquiring them was with such high picks and such high value. It was super disappointing. And it was a total fail for me.
Now, yeah, I think it's important to make this distinction once again. And we said this at the beginning of the episode, but important to make the distinction that F in terms of where they took those players, because like you mentioned, because they kept reaching, you know, Gannett and maybe I guess Kastelic were the only ones that weren't reaches. So just in terms of their strategy, in terms of, you know, they could have traded down, they could have probably realistically had three extra picks, taken these exact same six players and had three extra players to take as well.
Yes.
So yeah, F in terms of that, I would probably agree. But I think, you know, if we don't want to be total doomsday scenario here, I think it is important to note that, you know, I'm excited to see Thompson, Pinto, and Sogard next season, because I think those three players do have a decent chance to become NHL players, whether that's actual impact players. I mean, that remains to be seen. But yeah, so like they still added some good prospects, but I think 2020, the 2020 draft is going to be a real game changer for them, because I'm going to have to assume Ottawa is getting a top five pick in that draft, and that draft is absolutely loaded, and they already have two first round picks maybe even three if Duchesne re-signs with Columbus, and they already have 3 second-round picks. So they better be getting some high-end talent in that draft, and there's really no excuses because there's so many good players already.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the poor performance in this draft just makes the expectation for next year even higher.
Yeah,
it just means so much more because if the Sens have planned to rebuild, I mean, they have some good players right now to build around. That's Tkachuk and Chabot, but next year is really an opportunity to get extra pieces, and not only just those to build around, but you need complementary players to win a cup. You can't just have a couple of stars. So it's super important to load up on as many of these potentially amazing players as possible. So Ottawa failed at that in this draft, and my expectation is low already, just because even though I've had people tell me this a lot recently, but Ottawa's scouting staff is regarded by its fans as its only strength, as the team's only strength, which, I mean, is kind of depressing in and of itself. But even then, like, it's hard to see this draft, even the last draft and the one before that, even, you could argue, it's been a downward trajectory. And these have been a scouting staff that's stuck with the Sens for only a couple years. There's been a lot of turnover pretty recently, and all of these guys are on 3-year contracts now. They all just signed them too. So, there's even just looking more big picture. They've got the scouts, some scouts. They could use some more still. Of course, we've talked about Europe, but they still fall into the same tropes of looking for size, looking for those big bodies, looking for the character, and above everything else, they keep ignoring data, because obviously it's proven that of course they're not the only team that ignores data, but that just shouldn't excuse them at all from not even, it seems like they haven't even been looking at it, taking it into account. So something really needs to happen with this scouting staff, and I guess Dorian, because he's the one in control of it essentially. If they really plan on rebounding and getting back to that state where they're regarded as one of those league's better scouting staffs, because this year really, really tanked them hard.
I mean, I think you can make a realistic case that hiring 10 more scouts would be rational. I mean, like you were saying, they hardly have any scouts in Europe. They could be covering those leagues. I mean, like 10 to 15, I don't know. I mean, their scouting staff right now is already pretty small. I think there are other staffs around the league that are just as small. So like, it's not necessarily out of the ordinary, but they're definitely lagging behind some other teams. And I think another important thing to say about the draft and our thoughts on the draft and our analysis is that, you know, I've seen a lot of people on Twitter just, and you've dealt with this as well, people replying to you, and they are very quick to appeal to authority and say, well, you know, we're not watching these prospects all season, and of course we're not, and we're not scouts, and I'm not necessarily saying I know better than an NHL organization, an entire team, but at the same time, like, I think it is, you can still criticize a selection for being too high based on what other, you know, where the prospect is ranked on tons of different lists and things like that. And also analyze a player's ceiling. And sometimes that ceiling is a lot higher than we actually perceived it to be, but you can tell that Ottawa is going for these safer picks. And I mean, sure, some of these guys, maybe they will turn into NHL players, but that doesn't necessarily mean they were the best pick at the time. I mean, maybe there was somebody available like a Kaliev in the second round who was going to end up being like a first line player. So I think, sure, like, we can't necessarily, I don't know better than scouts which player is going to be an NHL player. And, you know, maybe they find a diamond in the rough with someone like Lodin or something like that. But I think there's too much appealing to authority, especially with what you're mentioning about how people are saying that they trust the scouting. And I guess it probably is the best part of their organization as compared to like trades and free agency, but it's certainly far from infallible. And yeah, they, especially with this draft, just with all the reaches, I like where the farm system is overall, but it could easily be in a much better spot right now.
See, I say have some more confidence. I think it's actually not that hard to beat NHL teams scouting just because they still... you remember the study about...
the potato?
The Jim Benning versus potato?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
if you just draft the highest...
Not Jim Benning. Dave Nonis.
There's been a few up there. I did this on the Sens a few years back. I still need to update it, but... I mean, the Sens lose out pretty well to that, too. And, I mean, NHL teams, especially the Sens, keep falling into the same tropes about ignoring small players. It's well established that small players can still play hockey, yet the Sens still continue to ignore that and pass it to players. Looking at data, like even if they have one data analyst, like they're certainly getting buried in the room based on the picks that are being made. And it's just a matter of draft strategy and not trading up for a goalie in the second round. Like these are simple decisions that there are so many public scouts that would be able to, that just wouldn't have done that and just said no, and Sens would have been better off for it. So, it's pretty proven that NHL teams aren't hard to beat and that they can certainly galaxy bring themselves into oblivion sometimes. So, like you mentioned, like it's the best part of their organization, but that's still a pretty low bar to beat. So So I don't have any more thoughts on that. Do you want to get some listener questions?
For sure. Yeah. It looks like there was six of them, so we'll try to go through these quickly. I will let you. Where was this one? I wanted to give this one to you. So this one comes in from Andrew. He says, are there any cap contracts that would come with a first next year that you would want to take on? I believe the Sens should take on as many potential lottery firsts as possible. So, did you have any names in mind?
I think we covered this on the podcast already, but it's actually going to be pretty tough just because guys like Milan Lucic and Louis Eriksson have these, there's two names for you there, but they have these no trade clots that are built in. And I mean, what do they have that wants them to go to Ottawa? And even looking at some like Patrick Marleau, where the team bought him out essentially right afterwards, Carolina, or I don't know if that's been official yet, but they plan on doing it.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure. The Sens should have been on top of that for sure, but I'm honestly not too sure if they'll even go in this direction or even they'll even explore this direction. I mean, Dorian did mention it. He'd explore that option at a press conference, but I think of the salary cap floor. And Ottawa's on a super tight budget. Like the budget's basically the cap floor at this point. And the cap was just announced recently. And the Sens are actually pretty close to the cap floor. I think it's something like $11.5 million away. And if you factor in the CC extension, Colin White and Christian Lennon. That gets them pretty darn close. And they're also negotiating with Brian Gibbons and Oscar Grindberg too. So that I don't think they should have as much trouble with the cap floor as I'd originally presumed, but so there isn't really as much of a need, I guess, to make that trade for Ottawa. But I mean, of course, certainly I would, Andrew mentions, I would be loading up on as many potential lottery firsts as possible, just because I mean, the draft next year is going to be so strong, and first round picks are just valuable regardless. So, Louis Eriksson and Milan Lucic are the two names that come to mind as players being shot, but it just seems unlikely. I don't, any other names that you thought of?
Yeah, no. I mean, James Neal's has been out there as well, but I think he has a no trade clause or no move clause. It would be really great. David Clarkson as well. I think they could probably get like a second round pick or something out of that. If they're able to do it, it would be incredible. It would be fantastic. Like just Carolina looks incredibly smart for getting a free first round pick for taking on Marleau. Like you said, though, I don't think it'll happen. I'm sure they'll find some way to sign a veteran free agent, and then, they'll be at the cap floor.
Yeah, for sure. So our second question comes in from Spencer Blake, and this is pretty draft-related. Who do you feel is the highest potential to be this year's late-round gem for the Sens, i.e. this year's Batherson?
Ooh, I mean... I'm going to assume it's just out of Lodin, Kastelic, and Gannett. So I mean, I'll go with Gannett. No real reason there. I'm just pretty low on Lodine and Kastelic. I don't know. I just sort of see him as like maybe a potential grinder moving forward. But I don't know. Yeah, not the greatest answer, but I think Gannett could maybe be a quick riser in the system just because he is right-handed. So, you know, after his QMJHL career, maybe he turns some heads.
Maybe he takes a big step forward like Max Lajoie did.
Exactly, yeah.
And maybe he does that, but the thing is, because Kastelic and Lodine are over Rangers, there's much lower chance that happens. So by default, I think the answer is Gannett here.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Next one comes in from Mike Little. He says, are there any other teams that seem to play from such a completely different draft playbook than the rest of the industry? I feel like you might know a bit better than I would on this one.
I mean, I'm not too sure about teams specifically. I'm not sure, Mike, if you're referring to good or bad here. I mean, I'm sure Ottawa is playing on a bit of a worse one if you look at this draft. But Carolina was a team that stood out to me personally. Them and Toronto were I think, the two that definitely seemed very data-heavy.
Yeah.
Or not data-heavy, like data-balanced, I mean, but heavy compared to the rest of the league, where, I mean, Carolina, they had three third-round picks. They took Dominic Vansore, they took Patrick Puistola, and I'm forgetting the third one, but Antoni Honka, of course.
Yeah.
And those are three players that I would have even considered. If I had a late first round pick, those are players that would have been on my board probably. So that was an incredible draft from them. Toronto also seemed to nail every pick that they, almost every pick that they got. These are teams that I do things as simple as recognize that small players can play too. And it's weird that it's still a market inefficiency in the NHL, but so it's just they're the less dumb teams, I'll put it that way. And in that sense, they play on a different playbook than the rest of the league.
I like that answer. Yeah, that I'm definitely jealous of those teams that are pretty data heavy in their draft analysis. Do you want to take the next one?
Yeah, this one comes from Ross. Do you think the reaches at the draft were more because the Galaxy brained after hitting a few late round home runs in previous years, or more because they don't have nearly enough personnel to scout effectively?
I feel like it's more of the latter. I mean, they're just, we've talked about this a lot in this episode. They don't have the personnel. They don't have enough eyes watching all these players. And if someone if they see Kastelic and he scores a hat trick that night, I mean, maybe they just think that he's a lot better than he actually is. And I mean, scouts definitely watch a lot of games, but first impressions really matter. And if one guy has a good game or if one guy has a bad game, like that could, you know, really change a scout's opinion on one player. So, I feel like it's more of the latter, and they definitely need to be hiring more people, like we keep saying.
See, I'm even more pessimistic. I just say both. Ottawa gets asphyxiated to these certain players, just want to take them and forget about what other teams might be thinking of them or other. So, but yeah, you're right. They definitely need to ramp up that scouting staff. It seems unlikely considering that they all got 3-year contracts at the same time last year. So it looks like they'll be kind of the core sticking together unless they want to bring in someone new. But it all seems like a mess right now. Mm-hmm. Speaking of messes, this one comes from Ryan Classic. Where was Eugene Melnyk? Was he hiding from me? Was he hiding from me and Trevor?
I mean, to be fair, I'm pretty sure Graham Nichols quoted a guy saying that apparently he was at like his daughter's graduation or something. So
yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, so I mean, that's your non-joke answer. But yeah, I'd like to think that he was just hiding from me and Ryan. So that's a better answer. By the way, the draft was a pretty cool experience. If nobody's ever been, so I don't know when the next one in Ottawa will be, but definitely recommend going if they have it anytime soon. So yeah,
next one is in Montreal next year. So
I'd recommend going to that. That's not that far.
Yeah, for sure. Just a quick drive. Well, I mean, 2-hour drive away. And
exactly.
I'll try and be there for sure. But
yeah, you should.
Yeah.
So last one comes in from Adam Weiland. He says, Sens draft well. The vast majority of all players drafted this weekend will never play in the NHL. Sens walk away with a few good prospects and can now look ahead to 2019-20. What position will the Sens target in free agency before the prospects take over in a season or two?
bit of a switch there, but
yeah.
It's I think if they're targeting free agency, I mean, Dorian said this in his pressers, but they're going to look at a couple veteran, I think, forwards he mentioned, because they seem pretty set on defense as long as they keep CC. I mean, you got CC Yaros DeMelo on the right side, and then the left side is totally jammed. So, I think it'll be a couple veteran forwards. Of course, they're negotiating with Lindbergh and Brian Gibbons still. So that just seems like what it will end up being, even if they end up doing that. But yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely love to see Spezza come back if they're able to do that. I mean, I can't imagine them signing anybody for more than like $2 million or something like that. So don't expect someone amazing to be coming in. I mean, even Spezza, that's more of a nostalgia signing, if anything, because he's 36 and he's, you know, like a 25 to 30 point center at this point. So, it'll be small signings, as always, honestly, because you can expect them to be pretty damn quiet on July 1st. So,
So I think that's all for today. Next up will probably be development camp. I'll actually be at development camp talking to some players, hopefully. So
nice.
Look forward to some content on that. But I think that's all for today.
All right. Sounds good. As a wrap it up, reminder that you can find the Cost Per Point Cast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and Stitcher. And if you really enjoy it, you can rate and review the podcast on those platforms as well. You can find me on Twitter at ShaqTS and read my articles at HockeyBuzz, and you can follow Colin on Twitter at CudmoreColin and read his articles at Silver7Sevens. The podcast also has a Twitter account at CPPointcast, where we'll notify you of future episodes. I hope everyone's excited for the summer, and stay tuned for a new episode in early July. That's all for today. Adios.